How's summer school going so far?
You know, man, it's been all right. It's a different group of kids. I've got a lot of people who are athletes at the school who are doing summer school less to be like ahead and more to clear up like a study hall period they can have during their sports season.
Oh, okay.
Which is, you know, it's still good thinking on their part. But it is one of those things, like last year I had a bunch of kids who were just getting ahead in classes. And so you can tell there's a little bit of a difference in the dynamic in class and how things go.
Yeah.
There's still like a really good group of kids, really enjoying the conversations with them. There's just not quite as many conversations.
Okay.
And yeah, I don't know, man. It's weird. It is a very, very intensely academic school, which means I've got a lot of kids who, like, if they miss one or two points on something, they want to know why. Like,
I was going to say, I can't even imagine the idea of going to summer school because you want to. And then, you know, but it would take somebody that is that serious about a grade to do those things. So,
oh, sure. Well, and when I say, like, so these are kids who are going into their sophomore year of high school, and okay. A lot of them already very heavily thinking about things like which classes will help them get the school they want to go to for college, you know? So it's like, well, if I take this now, that'll clear up a spot for an AP class in my next year. I'm like, huh, that sounds brutal, but okay, good for you, kid.
Yeah. Oh, to have not squandered the early years.
I don't know, man. Like,
also true.
I'm not 100% sure that we can say which direction is squandering at this point.
You can squander it in school too. Like,
yeah, 100%. Like,
for sure.
If you are, it's kind of one of those things, man. I feel like some of them, I'm a little bit worried that some of these kids are so focused on what they're going to be doing next that like they have no idea what they're doing now. And if that's a habit that like gets formed, so like, yeah, in high school, you're all about the college you want. And then in college, you're all about the job you want. And then at your job, you're all about the promotion you want. Like it's kind of one of those things, man. At a certain point, you got to start to recognize that like, yeah, what's coming is important, but so is what's happening. Yeah,
that you missed like, a
you
bunch.
You got to enjoy the ride a little bit too.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. All right, let's hit an intro and jump into it. Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation. All right, have you had anything good lately?
Yeah, man, I finished off finally my build your own sixer.
Nice.
And I had a beer from Jay Wakefield Brewing out of Miami, Florida, and it's called 24th Street, and it's their English style brown ale. And it is. It's a good brown ale. It's on the smell. I thought it was going to hit me with a lot more kind of like caramel sweetness and stuff to it. But it really doesn't have a ton of that. If anything, it's more kind of sort of a nutty flavor,
like an
almond type of deal where it's earthy and sweet at the same time.
Yeah.
And then on the finish, the bitter kind of comes through that kind of resinous hoppiness to it on the back side of it. It was a really good drink. It's really well balanced. It's just a... You know, it's a super solid version of the style.
Yeah, brown is one of those ones where it's like you hear all the stories. Oh, they drink their beer warm. That's craziness. And then you're like, oh, this is one I could totally understand being a little bit better the warmer it got.
Yeah, you know, and again, to a point, like that's the other thing is.
Yeah. Within
in the American context, we talk about, they're drinking their beer warm. Well, okay, they're drinking it at like. like 40 something degrees instead of 30 something degrees. Mm-hmm. You know, we tend to, with American lagers and stuff, you know, that
you make it as cold as you can version. So you can't taste it.
Exactly. Yep. I want to numb my taste buds mm-hmm. so I don't realize what I'm doing to myself. And so it's like 37, 38 degrees that those are being served at, you know, mm-hmm. just warm enough to make sure that the line isn't going to be like dispensing ice cubes at the same time it's dispensing the beer.
Yeah.
And theirs is more, you know, they call it cask temperature, but it's like, cellar temperature.
Cellar temperature.
And so it's more like in the 40s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like low 40s, 43, 44, something like that. And it was, you know, it's not a super strong ABV, 6%, but, you know, it's a nice beer. And so I was kind of sipping it as time went on. And because the sweetness is kind of that more mellow nut mm-hmm. Sweetness going to it, it was a little bit more noticeable as the beer temp started to climb mm-hmm. a little bit closer. Not anywhere near room temperature. I don't nurse things quite that long.
Right, but. Yeah. That's a long one.
Yeah, but it was
nice.
Good.
Nice. Yeah, I had a plethora of things. So, like, I got a bank to talk about for a little while.
There we go.
Because we went up to Pine Top for Memorial Day weekend. And so, you know, we were introduced to all the things that our friends drink and, you know, the coffees and all kinds of stuff. So I'll start with the coffee because I'm the coffee guy. So we're up in Pine Top and we're basically just crashing with some friends. Their family has a cabin, and so we just mooched along with them. And, you know, being the coffee guy, everybody talks to me about coffee, right? And so they're always like, you know, yeah, I like that dark roast, man. That stuff that, like, when you drink it, you're like, whoa, yeah! And I'm always like, uh-huh. I just smile and nod because, like, caffeine is, like, one of the chemicals that breaks down when you roast darker.
Right.
So, like, you think you're getting a jolt, but it's really just bitterness, and it's probably your fight or flight response and your body kicking in, not the caffeine. It's saying,
it's your fight or flight.
Save me from this stuff that you're pouring into me. But like the light coffees actually will give you the jitters. I thought I was immune to it. And then I started having light coffees and I got the shakes and was like, I got it real bad. So I learned that lesson. But anyway, so all they had was like a light roast up there in the cabin, so he wanted to go get a dark roast. And so we went to this local roaster, and it was cool. Like, the shop was really cool. And, you know, it was like the epitome of a small town coffee shop, right? So the dude was like a veteran. He had the veteran owned, and he was the roaster, and he, like, came up and talked to everybody and, like, showed Kristen, like, a map where all the people had come from to visit his shop. Like, he was not working. Like, he loved his job, and it was awesome. The coffee, though, my buddy bought, I think he bought like a 2 or 3 pound, 2.5 pound, 3 pound bag, something like that. And it's like $45. The 5 pound bag was like 90, I think it was 90 something for a 5 pound bag. So we're talking ultra premium prices. Like, these are like California roasters that compete for World Barista Champions are like 100 plus for a 5 pound bag. So he is like way up to, like, he's feeling good about it. But really, it's Pine Top, and it takes he's got to ship it like another 4 hours on top of the normal freight. So it's really cost driven, not necessarily.
Sure.
Anyway, this is me being nerdy. Sorry. So he bought the dark roast, brought it home, and brewed it. You know, again, not my place, so I'm not saying anything. I'm just drinking it, you know, because I can drink anything. But then later on, his wife was like, so yeah, you know, it was really dark. Because I went to go make a second pot. He's like, I think we're actually, like, mixing it half and half. I was like, oh, really? I didn't know that.
Oh, interesting.
and so it was, like, it was really funny. They're like, yeah, it was a little dark for me. I was like, yeah. I was like, His medium roast was like way past my dark roast. Like, for what we do for Nine Rings, like, his medium roast was a dark roast. And so his dark roast was ashy. Like, not just like dark, but like ash. Like, that was carbon, and ash was like the primary flavor that I was picking up. So it was a cool shop. It was something I loved to see, somebody who was really loving what he was doing. But it was disappointing coffee. Which is crazy because like the importer he was using, Royal Coffee, is like a premium brand coffee. Like he's spending a lot of money on green coffee. So he's got the good stuff, but he's just freaking burning the crap out of it, man. So I was a little bummed. But the sugar drinks that the girls got, like Kristen got like a mocha and our friend got like a caramel something or another. Those were good. Okay. You know, so like if you put enough sugar on it, it still tasted good. But you know, just drinking coffee, it was not my forte. And like,
again, knowing the quality of bean that he was shipping in and everything, that's probably a big part of what hurt you the most.
It was one of those things where I was just like, because I looked at it, I was like, wow, you're getting good green in. And then I was like, oh, that's a bummer. I was just so sad.
It's like when you watch someone take a really nice cut of meat.
Yep.
And then just cook it like hamburger.
Yep. Just flip it over.
And then
flip it again and keep cooking. And be like, no, it should stop. No. No, you're gonna flip it again. You're gonna keep it going.
Okay.
All right. Can I just trade you my bootstrap and I'll eat the steak and you can just chew on this piece of leather?
Exactly. It's like, you know
what? Please don't hurt the steak anymore.
this wouldn't bother me so much if it hadn't had so much potential to be good.
Exactly. Oh, it's the truth.
This should have been incredible. And instead, I'll just go lick the pavement real quick and get the same general feel.
Oh, man. So, yeah. So, yeah, I got to stop or I'm going to derail me because we're talking about meat and I had a hamburger that like changed my life up there. It was fantastic. It was like one of the best. So I'm going to derail this for a second. I'm going to talk real fast. I'm going to kick it out. This was a hamburger. So it was like fresh hamburger, but it was ground with Applewood smoked bacon.
Oh,
and so it was like all ground together.
So like that's what they're using to add some of the fat to it.
It was the bacon
beef.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so it was like a good piece of meat with the bacon fat. And basically, I grilled that, and he put a piece of cheese on it, and we had caramelized onions, and that was it. No sauce. I didn't put anything else on it. And I was like, this is the best freaking hamburger I've ever eaten. Like it was the best piece. I was just like, oh gosh, it was good. Life changing.
We're in a dangerous spot right now. We need to move on.
Cause right.
I've got questions that I shouldn't ask in the context of our podcast. Like it doesn't fit.
On to the topic then, which I am finally done with, sorry, God, it's not like it hasn't been a burden. It's been very enjoyable. I promise.
Clearly, look at all of the topics that it's brought up for you in terms of the things you've been considering.
I have really enjoyed the Minor Prophets, but I have finished them, and so I'm really excited to move into the Gospels because the Minor Prophets are like all messianic. Like it is so cool, and so like I found myself excited to transition into the Gospels and see because like I'm reading, I'm like, oh, there's Jesus, oh, there's Jesus, oh, there's. And I'm like, I just want to read about Jesus now.
And now comes the flip part of that where you're like, oh, I remember that.
Yes.
Oh, I remember Amos. I remember Habakkuk. I remember.
Yes. And so now I've totally forgotten. I apologize. I should have written it down. It was like one of the last of the Minor Prophets. But there was this idea that kind of caught my eye, and I thought it was interesting because it threw me because my concept of the Messianic Age is – probably more like the second, the return of Christ, right? Like, like the end all be all. And so like, this is kind of was a weird, I understand that the Jews were probably seeing the Messiah as more of a physical, like they were expecting a king, like another King David. And they were expecting it to be more literal. And so that might be what's throwing me, but regardless, it was an interesting idea. And the thought was that, like, once the Messiah had come and they'd reestablished everything, it was that if you didn't perform your sacrifice, like, there was going to be problems. And basically, like, here's what will happen to you if you don't do your sacrifices in the Messianic Age, basically. And I was like, that's really weird. Like, why would you not do that? And that's what made me realize that, like, in the, like, when we're all up with Jesus, like, can we screw up? Like, can we leave Jesus? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, can we, like, mess up our sacrifice? Or, like, or are we basically not going to have free will up there to choose? Because, I mean, the devils all had were up there with Jesus. Chose and fell, right? So, like, can we choose and fall later? Or is it kind of like, no, you're done and you can't get out?
So, a few things in there, obviously.
A lot, like,
that's
yes.
a lot.
That was a dump.
But, like, I'm going to start with what I think is probably the most important question and then go from there. But the idea of whether or not, like, once we're in heaven, can we make a mess of it and get kicked out? No. No. And it's not, though, through a loss of free will. It's through the finality of the choice we made to enter heaven. Like, there's – when we think about what happens that causes us to change our mind, it's new information.
Mm-hmm.
We learn something that makes us either regret a past choice or feel more confident in a past choice and hold on to it. When we're in heaven, there's no longer new information. I mean, there is. Like, we're constantly learning more and more of God. But, like
– but it's not that kind of information.
Exactly. The choice is still final at that point. And so in terms of where this is coming from in some of the messianic language, I think you absolutely nailed what that's about. For we're thinking of the Messiah as the one who is coming. And so were the Jews.
Yeah.
The difference is for the Jews, there hadn't been one who came yet. For us, like, yeah, they were talking about the coming of Christ. We are now post the coming of Christ, now awaiting that second coming. And so the terms aren't completely interchangeable there.
Mm-hmm.
What the prophets are talking about are those people who, like, quite frankly, as cool as it would be, and as much as there's a very real part of me that wishes I had been there to walk the streets of Israel with Jesus to follow along with him, I'm really fortunate I wasn't.
I've thought that, because too.
That's a super high-stakes game they're playing.
Yep. Yeah.
Because, like, and not just with Christ. Like, he's the one who we remember because he's the one who was. But, like, there were other quote-unquote messianic figures at that time as well. You know, under the rule of Rome, there were a lot of Jewish leaders who came forward under kind of messianic terms and messianic banners that they were going to restore Israel, that God was with them to do this. And if you pick wrong, not only are you going to, like, be brutally killed as you're part of a rebellion that the Roman Emperor is putting down.
Yeah.
But on an even bigger level, there's the thing that, oh, if I pick wrong about who is God's anointed, then, like, my soul is at risk as well. Like, getting this wrong is risking everything in this life and the next.
Well, you know what's weird? Like, I'm going to jump in there really quick. I've actually listened to a rabbi talk about how choosing the wrong Messiah actually isn't that bad. Because, again, the Messiah to them wasn't the Son of God.
Sure.
Right, type of a thing. Like, it was like, ah, we thought we did our best. We were wrong. Bummer. But it wasn't like, you're the Son of God. I purposefully denounce the Son of God. You know, like, it wasn't that kind of a thing.
That's true, actually. That's a fair point. Although there are also, like, talking about Judaism kind of universally is not that much easier than talking about Christianity universally.
Also true. Yeah.
In terms of so many different rabbis and things.
Yep.
Because there's also, you know, it would depend.
All the
did
schools.
Did this messianic figure go along with what the priests at the temple were saying as well? Or not? You know, like, I'm guessing Jesus isn't the only one who the Pharisees, Sadducees, and the priests in the temple didn't get along with.
Yeah, you're probably right.
There was a lot of power politics going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I say at the time, like, that's not a,
like,
universal constant throughout human history.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, so yeah, there was there was a lot kind of on the line, but you're right, not as much. It wasn't like we were looking at competing visions of who the Son of God is.
Yeah, we're not seeing him raise somebody from the grave and be like, no, you're not the Son of God.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. That's a fair point and a worthwhile clarification. Yeah. But, you know, nevertheless, the stakes were still massive.
Absolutely.
And so this warning, the prophets kind of elevate that idea of the soul and its risks as well, though. Like the idea of not so much if I follow the wrong person, but if I don't follow the right one. Mm. You know, like those declarations of here's what's going to happen if you are not making appropriate sacrifice in in this messianic age. Well, if I'm following the wrong person, I'm not making the right sacrifice.
Mm.
And like there was a lot of, again, I would love to be able to like take time travel vacations and go grab a seat on like the side of the hill while Jesus is giving the Sermon on the Mount. Be one of the people who's getting like the bread and the fish passed by. And I'm like, there are only 5 pieces of bread. This is incredible. Like just geeking out. Like that would be awesome. But that would be awesome because of how low stakes it is for me.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, and so that advantage that we have of having already known who Christ is, now for us, when we think of the messianic age, we're thinking of the perfection of it to a certain extent.
Mm.
And look at us go. Here we are with an Inklings reference. Tolkien, I think when we're talking about the messianic age, it'd be a good idea to think in terms of ages and not like decades.
Okay.
You know, like ages that are defined by like an epoch, you know, like this until the world changes, you know, because like basically from the coming of Christ and the sending of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost until the second coming is the age, you know, where Christ said, I will not leave you as orphans even until the end of the age.
Right.
And so that's what we're in. We're still in that messianic age at this point. So right now, we need to be getting our sacrifices right. We need to be getting our worship right. We need to be getting our choices right so that the reward that waits for those who do, for those who accept the Messiah and the messianic promises and reach out to them and receive them, we can receive that reward.
That's super interesting. I never thought about treating it like an age, because I skipped this age and was thinking of the next one, you know. So
yeah,
it makes so much sense looking back on the prophets now, and they're talking of the messianic age, and you're saying, okay, it's the change. They were on this side of the line, and it's just like on the other side of the line, you know. We don't want to leapfrog ages, and so like just on the other side, you're there, and now you're practicing, and so like you do still have the opportunity to screw up. And so that it kind of reconciles that for me in my brain. So that makes total sense. And I also like what you said about the finality of the decision, which I think is an interesting thing. And this is really at the heart of what I was chewing on was the in the next age, right? Like when we're in heaven, I was like, okay, so how do you have free will and not be able to screw stuff up, you know, like it wasn't reconciling in my brain. I was like, how do you, are we just going to become like robot? Like it was screwing with my idea of what heaven was, because otherwise if you can't choose and you can't screw up. And I was like, and even the demons could choose and screw up when they were, you know, looking at God. I was like, how is it that we can't? Because that's always kind of been the idea, is that like when you're in heaven, it's done, it's over, right? Like you don't have to struggle anymore. Like you do now. And I was like, well, boy, maybe like you are still going to have to choose Christ on a daily basis forever. But when you said the finality of the decision, the imagery that popped into my head was a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like I married Kristen quite a few years ago. Right. And like that was done then.
Yeah.
You know, so like there's not, I'm not going to have another wife, right? Like, I mean, God willing, all the things happen, but like, it was done. And then it's just like, you continue to choose these things, but there's no like going back beyond that point. Right. Like that decision was made, and I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm going to go back and be like, you know, take backs, you know, type of a thing. I can't do that. It's done and over.
Right. And I think that's a great image for it. In part because scripture agrees with you, like they call it the wedding feast of the Lamb in the book of Revelations. And like, so there is that, but also like you were talking about, you don't have a choice anymore whether you're going to be married to your wife. You made that choice and that's been finalized.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have freedom every day to decide to love your wife more than you did yesterday.
Hmm.
You still have that ability to choose to deepen it. And that's where like the choice remains. And there's a lot of the fact that you have made the, and I know I'm in the human terms right now, which I can see some wheels turning.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with you. But like
in the human realm, the fact that you have chosen your wife and she has chosen you, you have committed to each other for life, you are now more free to choose to love one another more deeply because you're not having to invest any of that energy in figuring out who is the person to whom I am going to give my love.
Mm-hmm.
That's been decided.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now you are more free. There are fewer distractions. There are fewer things to pull you away from that. We're still human. We're still living in this life. So it's still not always easy.
Right.
But it's easier than it would be without the grace of marriage.
Right.
In heaven, having chosen Christ, having chosen God with finality, the number of distractions and things that are going to be removed can't compare to that analogy that I just used.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are completely and totally free at that point to continue diving deeper and deeper into the mystery of God.
Mm.
We aren't bound by any of the things that hold us back, including the confusions and that like, I had it in my head just a moment ago. The however many fold blindnesses, you know, of the effects of original sin,
mm-hmm.
that darkened intellect, that weakened will, like those different things, those effects of sin are gone such that we are able to recognize God and so free to choose him.
Yeah, yeah.
More and more deeply with each passing moment throughout eternity.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think of what Paul calls it, like the mirror darkened or the darkened mirror and the shaded, you know, whatever
as
it is.
As in a mirror darkly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that. And I'm just thinking again, because I'm helping my oldest. She wants to do a writing competition for Peoria.
Nice.
And so she likes writing stories, but she says it's easier when there's no rules, and she's struggling. And I told her, I was like, babe, it's easier when they give you rules and you have a framework to work within. I was like, you can be more creative. There's freedom in the framework.
Yep.
And she's go, no, there's not. No, there's not. I'm like, obviously, you're 8. You know way more than me. So we're doing this competition that has no rules, and she cannot come up with anything. Like, she has no ideas. There's none of her creative stuff is coming to her. It's just like blank. And that's all I can think is that, yeah, like as soon as you can kind of put a framework in, you can kind of put a board down that you can push off of, you can actually do more, right? Like, you almost become more productive, because like, if we've made that choice now, the, like right now you and I have both made the choice for Christ, right? But it's, there's so much crap in the way, you know, or like our own selves, and you're just like, oh, I want to do this, but then I don't do this, and all of the stuff, you know. Again, Paul, thank you for the, you know, analogy of doing the things I don't want to do and not, you know. But like, as soon as they put that, you know, like they close the floor up and there's a board that we're something solid that we stand on, and then you can push from that, man, like you're going to be able to go, you know? And so it makes sense that like once I'm going, like I wouldn't look back, you know, like why would you, you know?
Well, and think about when you're talking about that idea of writing a story with no framework and no rules put in place around it, what makes it tough? It could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, part of what makes the decision to choose Christ and to commit to that and to stay with that in this life is that in this life, we have very little certainty that it is actually Christ we're moving towards.
Mm.
Like I don't seek to turn away from Christ, but in every moment, there are a million things that I can convince myself are actually the path to him, even though it's really not. In heaven, that's no longer the case. I have chosen Christ, and I now know what it means to pursue him. There is no more guesswork here. And so, you know, it's one of those things. And yeah. Give it a few more years, and your daughter will be well aware of it, because she's going to come home complaining about, you know, the teacher took points off of this, but she didn't say that she needed this in the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you wanted no rules.
Yeah.
The teacher said, answer this question, and didn't say how many sentences it had to be. Didn't say, you know, what sources you had to use. Didn't say any of this stuff. But there were still expectations there.
Yep.
You just didn't realize it.
Yeah.
Now the expectations are laid out. They're clear. Now you can succeed.
Yeah. That was really good. I really like that. And I think if I'm going into my life lesson for it, it would really be like I'm really digging into this idea of standing on the finality of choosing Christ, right? Because like if choosing Christ wasn't a final decision for you, then double check that, yeah. Right? Like there's been a point, like there's time now. Like I've always questioned, be like, you know, if I was, you know, the girl in whatever high school it was where they, you know, like put the gun to her head and said, hey, are you a Christian type of thing? You know, like I've always wondered, be like, man, would I have the courage? Like, I don't know. I don't want that test.
Yeah.
But it's never been like, you know, are you going to stop believing? Like Christ is final for me. Like I'm not going back. And so standing on that and then realizing that, yeah, we don't have the full framework. And so we're kind of blindly like, you know, mice in a maze bouncing off the walls, but we're finding our way. It's rough and it hurts.
Yeah.
But the finality of the decision, like in the marriage, I'm not going to fall below this point, you know? And I think that's a comfort that comes with, you know, the sealing of the Holy Spirit. Like you can be like, ah, he's got me. I've got him. Like there is that floor is closed. I know it. And being able to stand on that in confidence, I think is a big deal.
Oh, absolutely. And I think to me, like kind of on a similar vein, the life lesson is that idea of confidence. You know, not a misplaced confidence in ourselves, but the confidence in the one who brought us to the choice. Like, again, I mentioned it just very briefly when we were talking about that idea of the messianic age. Christ sent us the Spirit as an advocate. He promised not to leave us orphans. He promised that we would not be abandoned. And so I know he's with me. Like, shaking his head and occasionally releasing some super heavy sighs. Like, really? This again? Again? Like, dude, it was 5 minutes ago that you realized this was a horrible idea. What are you doing already? No. But as frustrating as I have to be for him to work with, you know, he's way more patient than I am frustrating, which is a hard thing to believe, but it's true. And he is there and he's with me and he's gonna, as long as I stay to that commitment that I have chosen him, that he is what I desire, he's gonna keep, like,
yeah,
he's gonna be my anchor.
Yep.
You know, we think of Anchor as like this big, heavy thing that like locks you in place. And to a certain extent, that's true. But like, if you think about the reason anchors are important for ships, it's because it makes sure they can't get lost.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of the storm, the anchor is what keeps the ship rooted so that when the storm has passed, they still know where they are. They're within a range. The anchor doesn't let them go too far adrift.
Right.
And that's what he's being for me right now. He is my anchor in this life to make sure that when I drift, because I will, because I'm stupid, that when I drift, I can't go that far and I can't do that much damage. And then when the storm clears, I can move forward again.
Yeah.
And like that, that's the key is that, like you said, it's that commitment, which is possible because of the confidence.
Mm-hmm.
If my fate was on my shoulders, I'd be hosed.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it's not. Like, I have a part to play. He's not going to drag me into heaven against my will. But as long as I am trying and I'm doing my part, I know he'll get me across the finish line.
Yep. Yep.
I have to run so that he can finish my race.
Yeah. Hmm. Hmm. I like it. That's good stuff. That's excellent stuff. Also good stuff is coffee. I listen to a podcast. When it's
not charred down to ash. Absolutely.
When it's not burnt. But I listened to a podcast that said coffee is basically a vitamin. All right. So it said that the chlorogenic acid is like one of those things that helps extend your life. And it was on the internet, so it has to be true.
And you tell me that I am having too much of that cold brew when I go through 32 ounces in a day.
Well, they did say dare you. 1 to 4 cups.
Did they say what size of cup?
Cup is a measurement.
How cup is a measurement. Quiet you. How very dare you shame my vitamin routine.
I'm being healthy. Oh, so we would like to help you be healthy by roasting and sending you coffee. But that's how you support these meaningful conversations. Because, I mean, if that wasn't meaningful there, I don't know what is. So, yes, if you'd like to give us some support, jump on there, buy some coffee. We would love to send you fresh, delicious beans to make bean juice out of. So, you got anything else on your brain there, man?
Nah, man, I'm good.
Right on, right on. With that, we will say
adieu.